Welcome to Two Way Talk here on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And I'm Carol Williams.
You know, the news of the last 24 hours has been horrible. Mm-hmm. A mass shooting in Texas. 5 people have been shot or hurt, 1 dead. In Baltimore yesterday, after our show at 7 o'clock, mm-hmm. a mass shooting in Baltimore over next to Patterson Park. 3 people shot.
6 people shot, 1 dead.
Oh, is that? Was I?
6
my,
people.
Oh.
Yes.
I mean, this is really a problem
yes,
here.
Yes, terrible.
And they were. I was watching the news earlier today, and the people over in that community, it's as if shootings don't take place. They were absolutely horrified.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the one woman said, I saw one of the women laying in the street. So a lot is going on, a lot of opinions. We want to hear from you, of course. What do you think about this violence in the city? What do you think about the violence in our country? Give us a call at 410-319-8888. That's the number to join the conversation. Major Neil Franklin, retired, Baltimore City and Maryland state police departments. I'm just reading my notes. I want to make sure I introduce him right. He has spent 23 years of incredible service to the Maryland State Police. He was recruited in 2000 by Commissioner of Baltimore Police Department to reconstruct and command Baltimore's education and training section. During his time on the force, he held the position of commander for the Education and Training Division and the Bureau of Drug and Criminal Enforcement. He also instituted and oversaw the first domestic violence investigative units for the Maryland State Police. While serving as a narcotics agent with the Maryland State Police, Major Franklin was persuaded by then-Mayor of Baltimore, Kurt Schmoke, who declared that the war on drugs was counterproductive and created excessive violence. We are honored to have Major Neil Franklin with us to talk about violence in the city, violence in our country, the example we're setting for young people. Major Neil Franklin, what an honor to have you on the program.
Anthony and Kara, thanks for having me on. It's been a while since I've been on WEAA, so it feels good to be back.
It's great to have you back.
Thanks for coming.
I'm sure that you saw the news, as everyone else did, of the mass shooting in Baltimore yesterday afternoon. It is a symptom of a much greater problem, obviously. We are on track, Major Franklin, and I'm sure you've heard this over and over again, to be well over 300 homicides in the city of Baltimore again this year. But this is not a problem, and I hate when people say this, it's not a problem that is relegated to just the city of Baltimore. Violence, right. Gun violence is happening all over this country. Give us your thoughts on what we're seeing happen, the violence in our society.
Well, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. It's not just unique to Baltimore City. D.C., Chicago, Newark, even New York now, cities out west, you mm-hmm. name it, we have the violence. And one of the things that can recognize and probably do recognize regarding the violence as we look back over the decades, is that it seems to be cyclical. It seems to, you know, we make some progress and mm-hmm. then we, you know, one step forward, 2 steps back.
Yeah.
But until we do some things regarding the foundational issues mm-hmm. of violent crime, we're going to continue down this road. We're going to have these little successes here and there, what look like successes, but we're going to revert right back to the increased rates of violence in our cities and in our streets. And there are a number of things. It's very complex. It's not one or two things. As we tend to, you know, as we look at this and try to solve, we focus on one or two things. Oh, let's go after the violent offenders. Let's go after, you know, those who are carrying the guns in our neighborhoods, you know, and we put forth all of these efforts, all of this money and all these resources into our criminal justice program, more money in the cops, courtrooms, and prisons. You know, we've heard a few people talk about housing issues, homelessness, houselessness, environmental issues within our communities, poor educational systems, and, you know, the list is long. Mental health, the lack of attention to mental health. Let me tell you something. Anthony, you talk about these mass shootings, these, you know, multiple homicides that we have, whether they're school shootings or whether they're the shootings like we had yesterday in Baltimore City. It's mental health is the foundation to it. People, to healthy people don't go around.
Don't do that. That's right.
That's correct.
We just don't. You know, so what are the foundational issues that lead to these mental health conditions that we're having, especially with our young people? You know, and it really boils down to protecting the minds and the bodies of our young people, you know, so that they get to a point where they can make good decisions, so that they can settle the disputes or disagreements with other people in rational ways. But this goes back so far. I mean, you know, within our communities and our Black communities, we don't even, you know, people don't even understand the issue of desegregation. And how it affects our communities. It has had
Our
community. Absolutely. And as you mentioned when you were reading my bio, and you mentioned former Mayor Kurt Schmoke, a lot of people don't understand the foundation or this foundation of, I put it this way, the impact of commodity prohibitions within our community. So I'm talking about the prohibition of drugs, you know, which, you know, people want, unfortunately, people who are addicted to these drugs want these drugs, and even people who aren't addicted to them want these drugs. People, we as a race of human beings, we'd like to alter our, you know, mental state of being. We love mind-altering substances, whether it's sugar, whether it's caffeine, whether it's alcohol, or whether it's something like cannabis and marijuana or other drugs. And you have to find a safe, the safest possible way to regulate these products, these commodities, and get them to adults so that they can use. Because if you don't, you just push it underground into the hands of organized crime, our local gangs and crews, and now we have what we have. We have reasons for people to carry guns as they are protecting their corners, their market shares, their money. And that, I'm telling you, in Baltimore City, Newark, you name any city or town across this country, most of the violent crime spins off of the illicit drug trade, period.
And, you know, the interesting thing, the reason I read your entire bio, normally I don't do that. I just introduce the guests, give them a little few stats, is because you really have been studying, you've been entrenched in this for a very long time. And I wanted to give those credentials for our listeners so they would know, look, if you want to ask a question or if there's something about what's going on that you don't understand or you have an opinion, this is the man to ask those questions to. You've either studied it, and I tell you, your reputation around the country when it comes to police reform and other things is stellar. And we have you at our disposal, and I just want to use you. As we, as Kara and I begin to unpack this, and as you know, Kara spent 22 years on the Baltimore City Police Department. As we begin to unpack this, I want to invite our listeners to call in and become part of this conversation. As we unpack the different aspects of it, and we asked Major Franklin to share his thoughts with us, we want to know what you think. Maybe you think there are some solutions that we haven't focused on right now. Let's have this conversation. 410-319-8888. Major Franklin, I want to begin our conversation around young people because I think we are still shocked and disturbed that young people go into schools and they pull out guns. Young people break into group fights and they fight until they have no energy or strength left.
Or the death.
Or they fight to the death because they will kill someone.
Yes, yes.
And I'm just disturbed by it. But why are we so disturbed? Because the example that we set for young people, the standards that we set for young people are so low that why are we stunned that young people have taken on the same violent culture that they see in the society around them?
Thank you so much. I don't know why people are so surprised and shocked. We, the grown folks, we set the example, right? Young people only do what they see. What they see, what they hear, what they smell. And, you know, we have character issues. What is the content of our character? Yeah. And, let me put it this way. We have so-called leaders, politicians, cops, faith, etc., setting these examples for our young people. You know, they're breaking the law. They don't know how to settle disputes with each other. Just look at our political system today.
I'm telling you.
Whether we're talking locally or whether we're talking on Capitol Hill, and nobody can sit down at a table and have a reasonable conversation about, hey, how are we going to work this out? You know, because everyone is so interested in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
What can I get out of this instead of what can we get out of this? You know, and they fail to understand that when you look at it from a we perspective, you know what, you're going to do better too. Mm-hmm. But if it's always about what can I get out of it, you're not going to make any progress or very little, if any. And then you're going to suffer too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's what we, the adults, do and don't do. And each and every one of us as adults, we all have an opportunity to guide a young person or a group of young people. But for your listeners, ask yourself, am I doing this?
Yeah.
And if I am doing this, in what direction am I guiding that young person or group of young people?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to ask
and
you.
Not
go
just
ahead.
What you say to them, but look in the mirror as to
what you do.
Because
that's what I'm asking.
They see what you do before they hear what you're telling them or trying to tell them.
I'm just also curious. We are doing everything except addressing the issue. We have the metal detectors in our schools. We have people come and talk to them about mediation and conflict resolution. We have all of these things going as part of the conversation, and we still have huge shootings like they had yesterday in Texas. Physically, what else can we be doing? Or is it that the young people today aren't hearing these messages that there are other ways to deal with this than violence?
So a couple of things here real quick. First of all, some young people are hearing this. You know, where I'm at now, down in Florida, a local school, some kids came forward and said, hey, this is what we heard about this particular individual who has access to guns and what they're planning to do.
Wow.
And so a tragedy was averted because young people came forward who were in that circle and said, hey, this is what we see. And then the police ended up going to the house of one of these young boys. It was two of them. And they had the weapons. They had the plans. They had stuff written out. This is what they were going to do. But more importantly, let's talk about one of our schools in Baltimore. Let's go back a couple of decades. Let's go back to Walbrook, right, when we had the Uniformed Services Academy. They're being run by Dr. Andre Bunley.
Yep.
He had such a relationship, and he taught other administrators and teachers in that school how to do the same thing, but had such a relationship with these young people who had his personal cell number. And he had that relationship that when something was about to go down, you know what? He'd get a phone call.
Oh, wow.
And he wouldn't call the police. He would pull the students aside and say, okay, This is what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? Let's talk about this because we're not going to have this go on.
Wow.
You know, and that type of relationship with between adults and young people, so that they get to trust you, and they see how you operate and what you do. He was able to, you know, avert so many things, bad things from happening at mm-hmm. that school, and because of that, so many good things happened. Now, we can talk about the politics
regarding
the Wahlberg Academy, mm-hmm. you know, during that time and other really good processes and programs and people within Baltimore City back during that time. We can talk about this wonderful plan that we had as a city called the People's Plan.
The People's Plan,
two decades
yep.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
But politics wouldn't allow it to come forward.
Jeez.
And that plan would have addressed all of these foundational, not all, but most of these foundational issues that we're talking about here today that, you know, are about the violent crime that we're experiencing today. And again, the mental stability of our young people,
mm-hmm.
you know, the acute childhood experiences that they have, you know, they're witnessing these assaults and these murders and these shootings and, you know, yeah, eventually they're going to become part of it and the perpetrators of it when we don't properly tend to them, their minds and their bodies.
I think that they are, like you said, Anthony, they are having the conversations in the schools with the children. My issue with that conversation is, are they dissecting the conversation that they're having with the children? Is it really for the children? Are the adults listening to what the children are saying, which they probably could pull that there might be a mental health issue?
Mm-hmm.
So if we talk about the mental health issue, then we got to get the community to move away from that stigma of mental health. And just like...
good point.
Just like Major Franklin said, they hear, they look, they see, and all that. But they also react to how they're treated one-on-one by their parents, by their peers, by people that they just come in contact with. So it's a whole bunch of stuff that has to be unpacked for that one child
mm-hmm.
that might say that key thing that will let you know he might need to talk to somebody professionally. And then if you look at it really, in the school business, I'm going to get it for this. The school business, it's a money thing. It's a money thing. If they pull that kid out of that school, is that money that the school loses, you know, and get him some mental health
mm-hmm.
help, you know?
So,
hey, Kara, you hit some good points. Let me tell you, it's all a money thing.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. a money thing, yep.
We have a bunch of callers on the line, and unfortunately, we only have a few minutes left, about 7 more minutes to go. So let's try to get as many of these folks engaged with us as possible. Kenneth is calling from Baltimore. Kenneth, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Yes, the question I have is this. What the situation about the motorcycles, the dirt bikes,
mm-hmm.
is it a way that you could make them, the city could possibly make them have to have a license and insurance? Wouldn't that be a two-way thing to help the city? And they would have more responsibilities. That's one thing. And the second thing I want to know is, how is it that the police and other people can ride by certain sectors, like on Bloomingdale and North, see the people on the gas station
mm-hmm.
selling drugs, but yet they don't do anything about it, and you can just ride up there? So how is somebody supposed to feel comfortable if they know they're going to be attacked by people that want to sell drugs and you don't? They have an attitude.
Mm.
Good question.
Major Franklin.
Couple of quick points. Mm-hmm. And let me start with the one selling drugs. I was on in Baltimore driving down North Avenue, Bella mm-hmm. Road, the
yep.
gas station there. Yep, there they were, all out there. And then, you know, so here's the thing. Let's look at places real quick like Canada. Let's look at Vancouver. Canada is now moving in a direction of a safe supply for people who feel that they need these drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that these folks in Canada and Vancouver and elsewhere can go to a place under medical supervision or whatever, get access to a better quality heroin, the best form of quality of heroin. They can get counseling at the same time. They can come back whenever they feel that they need it. Now, the illicit market is shrinking like crazy because...
Mm-hmm.
Why am I going to pay you for something that's a very poor quality and very dangerous when I can go to a clinic and get what I need, I need under medical supervision, get the counseling, you know, maybe get a sandwich while I'm there, get something to eat, get my wounds tended to, you know, get some articles of clothing, get so, and then hopefully have a chance of weaning myself off of these very problematic drugs. And also because that chaos in my life, that chaotic part of my life of stealing, robbing, doing whatever I need to do to get the money so I can buy it from this cat on a corner, that chaos has ended for my life. So now I have some sort of stability and some health issues are tended to. You know what? I can probably go get a job. You know, and that just, so that's just an example of why we need to move away from this current model in this country of drug prohibition and treat it like the health issue that it is, not just in suburban America, but even at the corner of North Avenue and Bel Air Road. You know, so that's just an example. And you know what? You put people in a corner swinging this stuff, you put them out of business. And then maybe you can get their attention to do something legal.
So let's go back to the phones. Toya, she's a new caller calling from Maryland. Welcome to Two-Way Talk.
Thank you so much. Just a suggestion, and I did mention this to the mayor when I did meet him. Why aren't they, I mean, don't get me wrong, I know drugs is prevalent in Baltimore, but a lot of times people, when they have idle minds, they're doing absolutely nothing. Why don't they offer some trades for not just the young people, but for adults? America was built on trades alone. That's how America became what it is. And at this point, we're still going to need the trade skills, and we're still going to need people to have the trade skills. Why don't they, you know, maybe just put some trade schools, not the ones where you got to pay, like, your soul away, but free ones that they can be offered through the school program, not just for young people, but for adults. Because, okay, you want to get people off of drugs, but how are they going to live otherwise? You know what I mean? And you know what I mean? If you're trying to get somebody upright and get themselves together, give them something that they can say, well, I have a goal that I'm trying to achieve. I can become something else other than what I am. I'm just saying that's just an idea.
It's a good idea. What do you think about that, Major? A concentrated effort on trades, putting people to work.
This is absolutely correct. This country right now is starving for electricians. They're starving for bricklayers. They're starving for any part of home building or construction. You know, in this country, we're just plumbers. You name it, and these are really really good paying jobs. A couple of things you have to understand. A lot of these paying jobs where you need licenses require that you have a clear criminal record.
That's right.
Near close to it. So number one, we have to stop criminalizing people for these minor offenses. Okay, don't get me wrong. If you're shooting somebody, different story. But these minor offenses that are here, especially our young people, we have to end this path of criminalization for them. Number two, again, when someone is...
Neil, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We're at the end of this first segment. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. And you can pick up right where you left off. You're listening to Two-Way Talk here on Public Radio WEAA. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Two-Way Talk here on WEAA 88.9 FM, absolutely the voice of the community. I'm Carol Williams.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
We are speaking to Major Neil Franklin. He is retired from Baltimore City and the Maryland State Police Department. Okay, Major Neil, you were saying.
Yeah, just real quick on this one point. So you have two types of people who are addicted when we talk about the drug world. Those who are addicted to the drug itself, again, you have to deal with that chaotic lifestyle, get them to a stable point before you can get them interested and capable of holding down a good trades job, a job of any kind for that point. Then you have those who are addicted to the lifestyle of selling it. Believe me, it's very addictive. And along with the money that they think they're making, but They don't realize that if they had a good, great job, they're making a whole lot more for the time that they're putting in than standing on some corner.
Stable money.
Mm-hmm.
Safe money.
Safe, stable, legal money. But again, as long as they think they have the opportunity and ability to go out there and do this on a corner, again, it's exciting for many of them, mm-hmm. although dangerous, they're going to do it. But if you take that opportunity, you don't see cats out there trying to sell booze on the corner, do you? Now, don't get me wrong. I know these liquor stores are very problematic for our community.
They are.
You got to address that with our elected officials and others. That's who you need to hold accountable for that. But you don't see cats out there selling booze on a corner.
Right.
They can't make any money at it. But you know something else? As I earlier mentioned, these commodities that are prohibited, pay attention to tobacco.
That's right.
Because that's coming next, and they're trying to prove, don't get me wrong, tobacco is horrible when it comes to the lives of our people.
Of course.
But you know what? If you prohibit the sale of tobacco, certain tobacco products, by these convenience stores and gas stations, and you push it to our street corners like these other drugs, you're going to have more violent crime knocking at your door.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the phone. Craig from Baltimore, welcome to Two-Way Talk.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a lot of different issues and ideas that I can talk to you about, and I hope you have time. And if you don't, please call me back on my home phone so I can call with you.
Right,
one of the things I like
we
to
need,
do,
okay,
we,
Craig.
Craig, you need to turn your radio down. Craig, are you there?
Okay, I hear you, sir, and I will do that immediately.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Craig, you need to turn your radio down.
There we go.
Yes, I'm here. I just turned my radio down. Can you hear me better?
Yep, we
yes,
can. Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you so much for letting me know that. Okay, when I was in school, we used to have something called, like, student patrol. And the people who were student patrol were the students themselves who had an armband on to let people know that they were student patrol. Now, the student patrol would, as they're walking from class to class or whatever, if they saw any problems that were occurring, they would notify the teachers and the staff that they see maybe a problem going to get somebody else to come to try to intervene before it gets out of hand. So they could do something like student counseling or student governments.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would pick big people rather than little teeny people because there are a lot of bullies in school, and they think they can bully little people.
Of course.
See, I'm a little person, but you can't bully me, okay? I'm just as bad as the biggest one that's out there.
I know you are.
But you do need to get big people because the crooks and the bad kids are going to try to bully us, you know, the patrol people, and try to say, you can't tell nobody. Don't snitch on me. This is not a snitching situation that we're talking about. We're trying to keep control and order and stability in the schools. Now, that's one issue. The second issue is the drugs. What they should do is the police department, who well knows where all of the drugs are being sold at because they sit on the corners and they watch them selling the drugs. What they should do is to put up a sign, no loitering. We already have loitering laws, so there's no problem about some new law and this and that and the other. It's very easy to execute that law. So you put signs up, and a lot of the places where they're selling the drugs are in front of businesses and stores. And sometimes as I'm going ready to maybe purchase something in the store, I almost don't want to go into the store. There's so many people hanging on the outside of the store and crap. You know, I almost don't want to even go in there. But because it's my favorite store and they give me good food and good service, I just go there anyway and then just sort of walk through and speak to the people. Hey, yeah, bro, hey. And they let me come through without a lot of problem. Now, if the police department, and this has to be done by the police department, this is not done by stores, so that the owner is not responsible for the fact that the police has made this an indicted spot. This is a known drug selling spot, and if we see you on a corner, we have to ask you to leave. You either leave or you get arrested. Now, because of the law and the, and Mosby, who doesn't want to prosecute, you know, people with small amounts of marijuana, great. That'll make the client feel good that they can go and buy the substance from these drug dealers, okay? So they don't have to worry about getting arrested. But you know who does have to worry about getting arrested? Is that drug dealer who is constantly on that corner selling drugs. Now,
Craig, we're going to have to move on. We have a whole bunch of callers. So we're going to try to get to all of them as possible. Thank you so much. Neil Franklin, let me get you to respond to what he was saying. With the criminal culture, and I know people are going to call and say, don't call it that, but the criminal culture that exists in not just our city, but a lot of cities, will a sign make that difference? And are we putting, there's a battle between prosecution, arrest, police action. I'm not sure if it's that simple. Put up a sign and enforce no loitering cuts down on people selling drugs.
No. Sign wouldn't make a difference at all. Even targeted enforcement doesn't make a difference. We've been doing this for decades.
That's right.
Yes.
I did it myself. I worked undercover. When I was with the Maryland State Police, we've saturated patrols. Look, in Baltimore City, we've closed off entire neighborhoods.
Yep, entire neighborhoods.
I grew up in Reservoir Hill. My mother's still in Reservoir Hill. We had blocked off streets. We had barricades up. Callow, Whitelock, Reservoir, big problem area up there. All we do is move it from one neighborhood to the next, one corner to the next. And along with that, when you target a particular area and you move those who are selling drugs to another corner, they're now encroaching on somebody
else's territory.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Here comes the shootings and the violence. And then once you have one shooting because of this encroachment, now you've got retaliatory shootings and violent crime for the next 6 months to a year, because it's so territorial. At the end of the day, a lot of these guys, they think, hey, it's a badge of honor if I get popped and end up
in
the city detention center. So that's no big deal. I'm not afraid of being arrested. I'm not afraid of being shot at. This is a culture of today. But the bottom line is this type of enforcement doesn't work. Doesn't work here in the United States. It doesn't work in Mexico. It doesn't work in Honduras. Right. It doesn't work in any country on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, we've got to end the conditions of prohibition and the illegality and the violence that comes with that. We'll put cartels out of business, too. And then we won't have the immigration problem that we have at our southern border. Get me started.
Yeah, let's go back to the phones. Christina, a new caller calling from Oregon. Christina, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Welcome.
Yes. Maybe I'm confused on what the callers are calling about. I thought it was an education something.
No, ma'am. But we're talking about crime and violence in our cities, in our society.
Okay, in Maryland. Well,
and Oregon.
Say everything begins in the home. Period. If the young people are raising themselves because their parents are doing what they want to do. Therefore, no one is teaching them anything that's productive, to have a productive life. So, I'm going to speak on the education system. Governor Kate Brown in Oregon, they're going to soon, well, a couple of years, the required reading and math will be no more because they say it's disparaging to people of color. They can't read. They can't do math. It's very unheard of. I'm well-traveled, and I'm just wondering why our students, children, grands, whatever, aren't made or taught to learn a language outside of supposed English. We need French because of Haiti. We have relatives that speak, Vietnamese, Korean. Everyone, I'll say, is well-traveled. They want everything, the millennials, because I have a few. They want everything quick, fast, and in a hurry. So the food is microwaved, not giving the youngins proper nutrition. They sent them off with a crispy something I've seen before.
Mm-hmm. So I think, Christine, I think that you're making some very good points. Mm-hmm. I think that our expectations of our children, whether we are living in Oregon or you're living in Baltimore, have got to be higher. And if we are preparing, and we have this thing that just comes out of our mouth, our children are our future. Well, if they really are our future, right. We have got to hold them to expectations. When they started lowering the grades in Baltimore mm-hmm. for passing, I said, this is a slippery slope.
Yes.
That if we are holding our children accountable, then they must learn math to compete in this world. They must learn proper English to compete in this mm-hmm. world. You can't begin lowering standards just to improve your graduation rate.
Right. I agree.
And I mean, go ahead.
Anthony, uh-huh. Christina, you guys are absolutely right. And this is one of those foundational issues that
yes.
I'm talking about regarding violent crime, right? But as you say, holding, you know, our children accountable. So, the question is who? And Christina talked about, you know, she mentioned it, she mm-hmm. talked about the home, right?
Yep.
So you got to understand, I know a lot of people do understand that, you know, for many of these kids, home really doesn't exist.
It doesn't
and
exist.
When I say
it
home
That's
doesn't
right.
exist, I'm talking about those people, you know, who they could look up to hold them accountable, you know, whether it's whoever that guardian is, whoever that significant person or people are within their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And many of these homes are so, I wouldn't even use the term dysfunctional. There's no function in them
None
at all
that's
positive
that's right.
for that child,
mm-hmm.
right? It's so negative. You know, even to the extent when you talk about the village, right? So what is the village? It's the home. You know, it's your neighbor. It's the lady across the street. It's the rec center and those adults in the rec center. You know, it's in that community. I think about rec centers growing up. When I grew up in Baltimore City and Reservoir, I had three within walking.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Right? And if I, you know, for those kids in my circle who didn't have a positive home life, you know what? Those adults and those figures within that rec center became those people.
They filled
That's
in
right.
that
held
gap.
Them accountable.
Yes.
Right.
Along with the teachers, you know, along with, you know, maybe a pastor or... Here's another thing. I mentioned desegregation at the beginning of this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had doctors, we had professors, we had dentists, all within our a block or two of my house. I mean, their offices were there. You know,
mm-hmm.
we saw them every day. We interacted with them every day. But in many of our communities in Baltimore City today, where are those, you know, professionals? Where are the dentists? Where are the doctors?
That's right.
They're not there anymore.
They're not in the city. Yep.
They're all out in suburban.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not saying that that's a bad thing.
And, I get
know,
it.
Mm-hmm. But again, who is there to hold our young people accountable on a daily basis, not just every so often?
That's
you
great.
Know, and so that's something we have to figure out, and that's a big part of a generational plan that we need going forward
yep.
to address all these issues from environmental health to housing to mental health to addiction to poor mm-hmm. education to criminalizing our young people,
yes.
school-to-prison pipeline, you know, the stuff that I used to do in school in Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God I never got arrested for it. Today I'd get arrested
uh-huh.
for it, right? And I never would have become a police officer or probably gotten any decent job, for that matter.
And you know, the other thing is, we don't like to do what Christina did. We don't like to, because we don't want people to feel uncomfortable, say that we have to improve the home life of
mm-hmm.
these children. We've got to improve the homes of these children.
Yeah, it's because the society has gotten so sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't
want people to feel like we're putting them down
yeah.
when we say your child has to eat when they get home.
Right.
Your child has to do their homework. You've got to be involved, engaged in the life of your child. And people get all kind of crazy when you say things like that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So let's go back to the phones. Lawrence is a new caller from New Mexico. Welcome to Two Way Talk.
Welcome, Lawrence.
How are you?
We're doing well.
Well.
Welcome.
I've enjoyed the show.
Thank you.
There's a lot of opinions, and I'm going to hit you with another one.
Okay, great.
I left Baltimore 9 years ago, and I know exactly what's going on in the streets because I was in the streets myself.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm 60 years old now. All right?
Uh-huh.
But I know that the problems that we're facing 9 times out of 10 are not going to be resolved overnight. I realize that. And I left to get a reprise, a breath of fresh air, and also I had a mission. You know, marijuana has been in my life for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to get browbeated and, you know, and all that, and find out this was my medicine the whole time. I have now, even I left 9 years ago. I bought 20 acres of land out here. They have now changed the laws here for recreational marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And in April, I'll be getting a license where I can, I'm growing now, but in April, I'll be able to sell what I grow in my own store, paying taxes for it. This is the same thing. You know, I heard the comment about the, you know, selling bottles of alcohol. And that's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in, you know, prohibition times, they were doing that and more. I mean, and to speak of a race of 6'2", you know, I get offended sometimes because, I mean, sometimes I think not necessarily.
Lawrence, I want you to get down to your point.
I think it's mm-hmm. you know, I think it's really detrimental to continue to blame ourselves for a lot of things that cannot be had, you know, we cannot change. Okay,
what I'm saying
is this whole scenario where the drugs was bad, I'm turning this into something good and being able to pass this to my family,
mm-hmm.
my sons and my grandsons and so on and so forth, so mm-hmm. they'll have an income that's way beyond that. Now, education is important, and that's true. And we are into my sons.
Thank you so much, Lawrence. Appreciate your and really appreciate your perspective of generational wealth. My fear, honestly, and I don't want people to sidetrack our conversation. We only have about 8 more minutes when I say this, is that not everyone handles drugs, the legalization of marijuana and cannabis, the same.
Responsibly.
Mm-hmm. And a lot, it has ruined a lot of people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he needed a reprieve. He had to leave Baltimore, opened a business, growing marijuana,
mm-hmm.
building wealth for his family.
Yeah.
That's one way.
Right.
There are other people who cannot get up off the sofa, cannot get a job or hold a job, cannot discipline their children, can't do anything.
Can't afford to get out of I was getting ready to say ghetto, but that's what it is. They can't afford to. They're working 3 jobs trying to provide for their family. And somebody says, well, if you don't like it, get out.
Yeah.
That's not a possibility for everybody.
That's not real. So I understand what he was saying. I appreciate his perspective. Major Franklin, we're going to try to get these other callers in real quick, okay? Let's go to Elaine. Elaine's calling from Maryland. Welcome to Two-Way Talk, Elaine.
Thank you. I was listening to the conversation, and I just want to make a brief comment.
Okay.
I've heard the comment, we need to hold our children accountable, and we're talking about drugs, and we're talking about decriminalization of low-level crimes. I think that's important, but our legislators through us, we need to get at the root of the problem, which is our children are unloved and they see disputes handled violently at home, so
mm-hmm.
then they go out and then they're violent.
Yep.
So it sounds silly, but we need programs, and the churches are not doing it. We need to funnel some money into daycare that's going to produce loving children. And when we say hold our children accountable, that sounds like you're treating children as little adults. They're not little adults.
Mm-hmm.
So to use the words hold children accountable, it's like, what? as somebody who's raised a child as a single parent and who has grandchildren and who are doing well and they're in college, and my son went to college, we practice love, and it's not do as I say, it's do as I model. And so we need to educate the parents. The parents need to be educated first. We need to put them to pouring in money to problems, to programs that are going to love parents and love children. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. And I appreciate your comment. I'm not sure if anyone on this show, maybe a caller or someone, said hold children accountable.
Yeah.
But I know that my co-host didn't say that. No. I didn't say it. And our guest didn't say that. I mean, we're talking about maybe adults being accountable for some of the behaviorals of their children now in society. But, yeah, I don't think any of us ever said that. And I agree with you, Elaine. It's about love. It's about love. We have to go deeper than love, but the basic is love. We have got to build a society that not only understands love but practices love. So let's get this other caller in. Simon's calling from Park Heights. Simon, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, one of the callers did say something about holding our children accountable.
Okay.
But what I want to say is that we've fallen woefully short of this. We need to hold our legislatures and our political leaders accountable.
Yeah.
You know, America is one of the most educated societies in the world, but we make policy, we act like we're not educated at all.
Mm.
You know, when we started shutting down the recreation centers in Baltimore City, parents came out and they begged the mayor and the city council to not shut down the recreation centers while they were opening up some international race course downtown, cutting down trees and everything, to have race courses and shutting down our recreation, our neighborhood recreation centers. And all that did was shut off the possibility of safe places for our young people to go to and opened up the recruitment of the gangs. You don't have nothing to do? Well, guess what? I got something.
We got something for you to do.
Come on over here, and I'll give you this, and I'll give you that. So we really need to start holding these political leaders accountable. For years now, the violent problem has only been getting worse. And what have we done in response? Put the same people in office.
We sure have.
I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
People are not addressing a very serious, life-threatening problem. It's not being addressed. And then even when people come up with other solutions, they're against it. They don't want facial recognition technology.
That's right.
They don't want privacy. The plane flying around to see and track crime because it violates people's privacy concerns. Mm-hmm. You know, and then the other thing is just recently, like the young man in Towson, the one-man crime spree.
Yeah.
You know, we got to hold our criminal justice system accountable.
You're right.
Because I know I hear us say our children all the time, and we give a lot of sociological reasons why they're acting out. But the truth is they're acting out.
Mm-hmm.
A carjacker with a gun.
Simon, we've got to go. Simon, thank you so
thank
much.
You
are on point. You were on point. So, Major Neil Franklin, we're going to wrap up. We only have about a minute and a half left. Can you give us some final thoughts on where we need to go and what we need to do?
Yeah. So, for the most part, the many things you've just heard the callers talk about, whether it's Lawrence, Elaine, Simon, Kenneth, you know, this is what I've been saying. We've yet to have a multifaceted, comprehensive plan, generational plan for dealing with these issues in our city, which ultimately result in the violent crime that we're seeing and experiencing, the mass shootings and so on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, as he was saying, you know, our political leaders, you know, are we willing to go to the polls? Are we willing to go to these town hall meetings? Are we willing to hold our elected officials accountable?
Mm-hmm.
And then when they don't produce what they say they're going to produce, then you get rid of
it. And then you change it. Yep.
But have we ever had in place a proper
comprehensive plan to bring all of these issues that we're talking about today, you, Kara, the callers on the show, and more. Have we ever had such a plan? No. All we've had are, you know, a plan dealing with crime, more police, you know, let's pile on a prosecutor, let's pile on the judges, you know, let's have a plan for education. But all of these things need to dovetail one another. They need to work together. It needs to be for a generation so that we can get the results that we seek and that we need. Until that happens, you know, all I can tell your callers is to stay away from these politicians, you know, who want to give you a 2-year plan, a 4-year plan to deal with one or two issues, and that's why they want your vote. Forget that, right? Put a multifaceted plan in place, generational plan in place that cannot be changed or altered in any significant way during the life of that generation, because the next administration to come in will chop it off at the knees, and then you'll be back to square one.
Major Neil Franklin, that has to be the final word. Retired Baltimore City and Maryland State Police Departments, an extraordinary leader in our country, and we were blessed to have you. And thank you for staying on longer with us as the calls started piling up. Major Neil Franklin, thanks for being with us today. Guys, appreciate you. Folks, let's go to Amy and get our MTA report, and then we're going to take a very quick break.
Hey there, good evening. On light rail link, that work continues between Falls Road and Camden Yards. So there is single tracking taking place in that stretch and shuttle bus services available. Allow extra time for your travel on light rail link. Metro Subway Link, no delays reported. Unmarked reported. Unmarked reported. Unmarked.